all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this wonderful country of ours, or wherever you are in the world. We had a call not too long ago from Australia. That's right. Can you believe that? The land down under? It's already Monday morning there, and they gave us a call right on the air. So we got listeners all over the world, and we're going to be bringing you another edition of Veterans Radio right here on Talk Radio WAAM 1600. Today is January the 31st, and we're going to mark two events. We're going to mark, I guess you could call them anniversaries, although that usually has a not quite a solemn ring. This is the 30th anniversary of the Challenger explosion that happened in our country, and really set us all back. It was quite a thing to witness. It actually wasn't witnessed by that many folks that were glued to the screen at that time. I just happened to be myself and saw the event take place. And you know, these are the kind of things that folks do, military folks, civilian folks, that they really are the heroes. They're the ones that are out there that are blazing new frontiers and new trails. And we had to have the whole shuttle program. It had to be, because there's so much that is now being put into the Mars program that was a result of the shuttle program and events that took place with the shuttle. So the Challenger, 30 years ago, exploded just 70 seconds after liftoff. And we're also going to talk about and celebrate the life of a very fine young woman who was killed 12 years ago today in Iraq. And her name was Holly Mago. She was a specialist in the Army and somebody that did her job. She went out into harm's way. And to talk more about this and tell us about where some of her artifacts are in an exhibit. And also I have her mother standing by. But first we're going to introduce John Agar from the Michigan Military and Space Museum up in Frankenmuth, Michigan. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, Bob, thank you very much, and good evening to you and all of your listeners. We're here at Michigan's Military and Space Heroes Museum up in Frankenmuth, Michigan. And at the moment, I'm standing right in front of Holly's display here that we have.
Let me get to this Challenger, well, though. The Space Museum there in Frankenmuth.
Yes.
And you mentioned here that there was a payload specialist. Greg Jarvis. Tell us about that.
Well, Greg Jarvis, he was born in Detroit, Michigan in 1944. But he was, his family moved to New York, and he graduated high school and went to college in up in Buffalo, New York. But we still consider him here from Michigan, being born here. We don't yet have a display for him here at the museum. We do have 15 other of our Michigan astronauts here at the museum, but including Roger Chaffee, who just last week was the 49th anniversary of the Apollo 1 disaster as well. But Greg Jarvis, of course, he was a payload specialist. He had been in the United States Air Force from 1969 to 1973, but he left the Air Force and went into aerospace engineering, and became a payload specialist, was selected to go on the Challenger that fateful morning in January of 1986.
Did you happen to see it live?
I did. I was at my elementary school, and we had a rain day, and so we were watching it on the TVs inside the school that they had brought them in. Of course, technology back then, there was one TV for every three or four classrooms, and we were watching the launch at lunchtime, and it was something I'll never forget, watching that go up, and then the fireball and the two side rockets going off in separate directions.
In case of folks don't know, they were advised by the engineers who built the booster rockets together, not to fly, folks. They were telling NASA, don't fly this. It was a sunny day in Florida, but it was very cold. There was icicles on the vehicle. And these O-rings that are sealing between the sections of the booster rockets are to instantly form up when the hot gases come through so they don't leak at the connections, and that didn't happen because the O-rings were cold. They didn't seal fast enough. And you actually can see, if you can probably go to YouTube and look, you can see a little black puff of smoke comes right as the engines are firing and the rocket's ready to lift off. You can see this little puff of smoke down at the base, and that was where the O-ring failed. And it burned through the booster, it burned through the fuel tank, and the rocket exploded. I did find something else in doing some research, and this is really something.
Mm-hmm.
They found a tape recorder. Now, there's some that are doubting whether that recorder, a personal recorder that Krista McAuliffe had on her person, that she was recording the flight, the liftoff, and at that moment, of course, 73 seconds, I think it was, after liftoff is when it exploded. Well, that survived. That tape.
Wow.
That I know, and they have the transcript. Folks, you want to talk about some brave people. They were 60,000 feet in the air. It was the cabin, survived.
Yeah.
It didn't disintegrate. It wasn't exploded, and for 2.5 minutes the crew was aware of their situation, and there is a transcript. You can get it by googling transcript Challenger tape transcript. It's quite moving. I mean, you think about what would you be doing, knowing your fate, and you still had time to say a few things. It was quite something to read.
Wow.
Yes. And so I really encourage you, John, you folks, to get something together there for the Challenger. Something, you know, just to get started and collect that. But also now with me on the line, because the second item that I'm covering right here and opening our program, when we were just starting out in radio, Dale and I, and Ken and Gary, there was an event that was brought to my attention. A young woman, a 19-year-old Army PFC, Holly McGo from Taylor, Michigan, was killed 12 years ago today. Actually, she was murdered by the Taliban. That's the way I look at it, folks. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You darn right.
I agree.
And she was, thank you, and she was put, the cowards, they blew her up. She was a truck driver in a convoy. So the cowards, just not even a face-to-face, the Taliban, all cowards, of course they are, the things that they do. But they put this little girl in harm's way, and She didn't survive, and neither did two others that were riding with her. And it was moving to me when I read about it. And then there was a memorial in Taylor, Michigan, at the city hall, I believe in March or April of the year, 12 years ago. And quite a few folks showed up, and John Dingell, Congressman Dingell, it was really Senator Stabenow, et cetera. It was really, really very moving. And also there was Holly's mom. And on the line with me right now is Paula Love, the mother of Holly McGough. Paula, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
I was thinking, what can I ask you? And I want to say this, and if you can, of Holly's personality, of her character, what was the strongest attribute that you want to share with us?
You know, it's a challenging question, because it was almost as if every one of her attributes were her strong attributes. And if I had to choose one, I would have to say that it was her smile, because she could light up a room just walking into it with her smile.
And
she had no fear. There was just so many of her attributes that were very strong attributes.
And when I read a couple of, I'm not even sure where I have these in, from my file. I must have got them somewhere from the internet, because I was able to print them out. But there isn't a whole lot about Holly that's on the internet or on Facebook. So before we go any further, I want to challenge everybody out there that can help me and put something either on Facebook or get a website started, not just for Holly, but for women in the service. And maybe even start a little foundation that can be for women that have been in the service or that are in the service. Not a whole lot of bucks, but just something that they can apply for, little scholarships and things in Holly's name. So I want to ask all my listeners out there, you go to bob@veteransradio.net, let me know that you're interested in putting something together about this. And it won't be for just Holly. It'll be for all the women that have served. And I'm not talking World War II or Korea. No, that was them. We're talking about now. They drive trucks. They fight. They're in jet airplanes. They're in combat. And, you know, there were some Neanderthals way back when Holly was in Iraq. Well, women don't belong in. Well, you know what? That's a lot of phooey. Because she did it, and she did her job.
She was very proud to do it.
What were some of the goals that she talked about?
Holly's goals were to finish out her 3 years, come home and get an associate's degree, and go back into officer school. And she was leaning toward either getting into intelligence or psychology. That was pretty much her goal, talked about.
When we talk about the younger generation, and all the older generation always talks about the younger generation, right, because we've got to pave the pathways for these folks. And what a better example than Holly McGough, when this is what she did. She had her life planned, going to go in the service, get the GI Bill. That's the way it's all supposed to work out. And have all those skills military skills that you learn and the military manner that you bring with you into civilian life. And she did it. She did it. She was in harm's way. She was killed in Kirkuk, which is Saddam Hussein's hometown. There were 100-1 of Taliban in Kirkuk, because that was the last of the strongholds. And she did her job. She was right in the teeth of where all the danger was, and she didn't back down. Tell us about Tell us about her nickname, Willie. How did that come to be?
That was just a nickname that I came up with when she was a baby, and I don't even know how I was rhyming one day, and I just came up with Willie, and Willie it was. Willie it was until the day she died, and I remember going to see her when she graduated from boot camp, and it was family day, and we were looking through hundreds of soldiers all in their BDUs, and I make eye contact with her across the fields with all these other soldiers, and I just hollered, Willie, and I started running toward her, and of course, she stopped me as she grabbed my shoulders, and she said, don't call me that in front of everybody.
She lived so much of life in such a short time, folks. When we think about living life in our long lifespans, and here's somebody that crammed so much into such a short span. She was living the life and living the dream and living what she wanted to do. I know, do you have that Christmas card with you? Do you have that with you right now?
I do not have it with me, but I can tell you what it said.
I'll never forget it. I'd like you to do that, please.
In the Christmas card arrived a couple of weeks after we buried Holly, and she kept telling me that there was a box that was on its way home, but of course we didn't get it. The mail was very slow at that time, and in the Christmas card it said that she knew how sad my Christmas was because she wasn't home, but I was to be happy and have a very Merry Christmas, and that when she came home that we were going to have a girls' week together, and that I could stop taking my antidepressants because I wouldn't need them anymore. And she told me to have a very Merry Christmas and that she loved me. And
she always wanted you to send candy, lots of candy. What was that for?
She loved to give the candy out to the Iraqi children. She spent a lot of time with the children, and she told me one day, she said, Mom, I'm so grateful that I grew up in the U.S. I had no idea what it was like in other countries for people and how blessed I was to grow up in the United States. And she felt very sorry for the children over there, and she would have me send tons of candy so that she could hand the candy out to them. There's a story that I was told. Actually, she told me about it, but then it was also in a book after her passing, and it was her and a sergeant. They were raiding this building, and there happened to be a lot of children in the building. So Holly and the sergeant had to round up the kids and keep the kids in one area while they raided the building. And they were trying to find ways to keep all these kids busy. There was about 15 of them, and Holly and the sergeant taught these 15 Iraqi kids how to play duck, duck, goose. And when she told me the story, she was so thrilled because she said, Mom, they couldn't speak any English whatsoever, but we had them saying duck, duck, goose. And we taught them how to play that game, Mom, that simple little game, and they had so much fun, and they were smiling. She was so happy about that.
Well, Paula. It's hard.
You can't do that. This is a hard enough day. You can't do that.
I am very moved, and I want to thank you for coming on our program and sharing your thoughts about Holly. And God bless you. And I know we're going to do something for Holly, with Holly, with her spirit. We will be doing something, and hopefully it'll be shortly and I can get back with you. Thank you very much for being on our program, Paula.
Well, thank you for having me. It's very important that I do everything I can to keep Holly alive, keep her memory alive.
Well, you know what?
Make sure she's not forgotten.
Oh, I guarantee you. long as I'm alive, man, I'm never going to forget that little girl.
Is she?
Okay.
I was so afraid when she first passed that I would that people would forget about her, but it's been 12 years, and I'm a lot more confident today that she won't be forgotten.
Derek? We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Talk Radio WAAM 1600 Ann Arbor, Michigan. Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio. We have a few more minutes. John, back with you. Whew, boy, that was really something. Boy, Wow.
I was trying to hold it together until you played tap, so, Bob, I lost it.
I'm crying.
Glad we had
break. She was just a little soldier doing her job, folks. Doing her job. You know, and on the eve of a big event in Iowa, the biggest thing in our country is electing our government and the president, and on the eve, and to be able to honor her like that and doing what she did, what she loved. And John, we got a couple minutes here. Tell us about the exhibit that you have.
Well, I'm a very lucky man, Bob. I get to see Holly every single day and honor and respect and remember her every day as I walk through the museum. We've got her right here near our back conference room and workspace. We have, of course, one of her large blown-up picture of Holly in her battle uniform here. And of course, that's encased by a gold frame, unfortunately. Gold frames for our gold star individuals here in our museum. And along with that, we also have her dress uniform here with all of her beautiful ribbons that she earned, every single one of those. Of course, a Purple Heart for her wound and a Bronze Star for Valor here.
She did get the Bronze Star.
She did get the Bronze Star.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Sir.
I didn't know. I was talking with Heidi before the program, and that was going to be one of my to give a call to our congressperson on that. So is that there at the exhibit, too?
That is, yes. We have, of course, a small story about Holly and what she did, as well as her medals here in we call them Riker mounts, but the case is here that we keep all of that in. And next to her Bronze Star is her Purple Heart, and then her Good Conduct Ribbon and National Defense, and her War on Terrorism medals and Southwest Asia medal here.
Do you have any other females there at the museum? Anything?
Oh, yes, we do. We have one other in our, we call it the War on Terror, our Iraq-Afghanistan campaign section. That is Lieutenant Colonel Duker, who was with the Air Force. She was a nurse with the Air Force. But throughout the museum, scattered throughout in all of our various galleries for different conflicts and time periods, we do have women all over in here, and sometime this year we are going to fill our World War II gallery with women and have a Women in the World War II month. So we'll have enough. We have over 12 women to put in our World War II gallery alone.
Okay,
so
we've got to cut cut loose here and
sure.
get ourselves back to the news. John, we might be talking to you by the end of the program, but if not, it's in Frankenmuth,
okay.
Michigan, the Military
Museum.
We'll be right back. You listen to Veterans Radio. Yeah, we're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Talk Radio, WAAM 1600, coming to you live from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Oh, boy, that was really something. Well, I wanted to cover some things from the VA, and our Veterans Administration is working for you. So I have three individuals from the VA to tell you about some things that are going on at the veterans, the VA health system, especially the one in Ann Arbor. And first on my list is Linda Harrison. She's the Veteran-Centered Care Coordinator. Whoa. And she has a little bit under the weather. She said she's got a frog in her throat. Well, I hope that's gone. And but she will be telling us right now about the Welcome Center that's being built, put together, whatever you want to call it, at the Ann Arbor VA. Welcome Center. Why do we need a Welcome Center?
I apologize for my voice. This project is really exciting for us, and it has two major benefits. One is that we're going to be able to combine veteran services, the services that veterans use most, into one convenient area. So that includes things like travel, eligibility, medical records, veteran service officers, etc. But secondly, by moving those services forward into one administrative area, we're going to be able to add 22 clinical exam rooms that will improve access.
Well, it sounds to me like you folks are completely, how should I say, Well, you're doing something to the Ann Arbor VA. What first brought all this together to have the Welcome Center? What were some of the issues that you had to solve?
Well, the clinical access is certainly a huge impetus for us, wanting to make it easier for veterans to get the medical care they need by having more exam rooms available. But we also knew that our main lobby had some issues. It's noisy, it's congested, there's not a lot of nice, comfortable waiting for veterans waiting for transportation. So we were able to start conceiving of this project that would kind of kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. So this will add 10,000 square feet to our main lobby area, bump out the front of the building, and we've been planning this for since spring of 2014, actually.
And when do you expect this to be completed?
So, as you know, construction is always a little unpredictable, but our best guess is that we're estimating about 12 months before the Welcome Center's open.
Well, I got a suggestion. Why don't you bring in the CBs, man? They take care of the CBs before the troops even land. They already got the Officers Club up and the PX and everything else. So those guys in 12 months, they had to knock that right off. But anyway, in 12 months, so that'll be in 2017, right? That'll be opening up?
Yep, that's the plan.
I happen to use the VA, and I do want to pass on to everybody out there. I had just a great experience with my recent visit, my recent appointment there. I came in, I was seen within 30 minutes, actually it was 15 minutes in, got there, saw my primary care physician, picked up my prescription, got a bowl of soup up in the cafeteria, and that was it, and I was out the door. Oh, and the parking is no check. Wow, what a nice experience. So I don't know where they're getting all this other information about bad VA. It doesn't exist, folks. There's bad people, but they get broomed out, I hope, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We are really happy that you had such a great experience.
Oh,
that's our goal.
And it worked the way it's supposed to work. Right? It's supposed to work that way. You come in, bam, bam, bam. So you really are doing your job. You get the Veterans Radio and the Bob Gould seal of approval. And Linda, we're going to have you back on to give us an update in a couple months and see how we're progressing along. And if you have anything else that you want to share with us, of course, you know how to get back with us. So thank you very much for being on the program, and gargle and have some shots.
Thank you,
Jack,
Bob.
Jack Daniels. No, not those shots. No, but really, tea, honey, and brandy. That'll take care of it.
All right. Thanks so much.
You have a great day, Linda. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Okay. Next on, we're checking these now. This one, folks. I talked to a lot of folks about this choice card. What's a choice card? I have no idea, man. Well, we've got somebody on the line right now, Brian Hayes. He is the Advanced Access Coordinator, and he's going to talk to us and tell us about the VA Choice Program. Brian, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hiya, Bob. Thanks a lot. It's nice to be on.
Well, you and I, when we had our little pre-interview this past week, we were talking about folks, we go through this cyclical. We have a large military presence, and then we stand down, and then we build it back up, and we stand down. Now, you're going to have that with the bricks and mortar. So, I saw, and I think I'm right, because I think that the choice card is just the beginning to where the veterans, instead of bricks and mortar, we're going to be building more and more, or we're going to be emphasizing more and more on having a card. Just like Blue Cross Blue Shield. Yes, you'll be able to go where you want. But that's not in effect right now. You heard it first here, because it's my prediction. That's right. I know he's laughing because he knows, aha, you've been on these planning sessions. So, but there is something called a choice card. That's for those that might live up in Iron Mountain, and you know where that is, way up there. And they may not be able to come all the way down here to Ann Arbor to get their care. I mean, why should they do that to get primary care or secondary? Tell us all about that, Brian.
Well, that's sort of right. And, you know, you've got a lot of the points exactly the way they are, with a few exceptions. So the Veterans Choice Program is part of the Veterans Access Choice and Accountability Act of 2014, the act that Congress put in place. And it was to help improve veterans' access to health care by allowing eligible veterans to go see community providers for some of their health care if they were eligible in the program. And eligibility comes in a couple of different ways. The first way is because of a wait time. So if you have to wait more than 30 days because there's no availability for you in a VA medical facility, then you might be eligible for the choice program. But also, if you live more than 40 miles driving distance from the closest VA medical facility, and that includes the outpatient clinics as well, then you might be eligible to go to the choice program.
So how do they somebody wants, well, I think I'm eligible. What do they do to find out?
Well, if you want to find out if you're eligible, I've got a phone number. Do you want me to give it?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, the phone number to call the Choice Program is 866-606-8198. That's 866-606-8198. And that's how you can verify your eligibility.
And what was that, 866?
606-8198.
Okay, 866-606-8198. And they will, and somebody there will... we'll go over eligibility and find out if you are. And that doesn't mean, I mean, that can change your eligibility, correct?
Well, like I said, if for example, you come in and we have an appointment for you that's within 30 days of the time that you want to have your appointment, then if you're not distance eligible, then you wouldn't be eligible to use the choice program because we have an appointment for you at the VA. If you're a veteran that lives more than 40 miles away from any VA facility, that's a different kind of eligibility in the choice program, and then you would qualify.
Folks, 866-606-8198 is the number to call for the choice card. Is there, if they go to MyHealthVet, can they find out more information on the choice card?
I think MyHealthVet might have some information on there, but also if you just go to the VA, VA.gov main website, there's some good information on there too, and just navigate to where the choice program is. And that's got some really good FAQs, so you can answer a lot of different kinds of questions. that might come up, different sorts of eligibility, because there are some eligibilities that are more specific to certain individuals that in this forum it's probably not the best place to go over because they're just real specific.
That's right. I would recommend starting with the website and then going to 866-606-8198. Talk to a real live person. Brian,
yep, that real live person can sit there and put your name in the computer and they'll tell you right there if you're eligible.
And don't forget, folks, to have your DD-214 handy, right, Brian?
That's something you should just have a T-shirt made of. That's just something you should have all the time. You should always have your DD-214.
Always have your DD-214. And if you don't have it, you can go on the Veterans Radio website. We have all the information on how you can do that. Brian,
right.
Thank you very much for coming on the program. Thank you for telling us about the Choice Card. We're going to have you on again shortly in another couple months, and we'll find out how the whole thing is working. You have a great day.
Thanks, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Ah, the triad, the third one of our VA folks that we have right now is Adam. Adam is calling us. He's from...
Adam's not on the line.
Oh, we didn't make it?
No, Gloria is.
What happened to Adam? Oh, we couldn't reach him? Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to talk about it for just a second then. He was with the... he's with the Detroit VA, and I'm going to Adam Stevens. And this is on the Golden Age Games, which are coming up in July 10th and 14th in Detroit, Michigan, open to all veterans 55 or older who are enrolled in the VA healthcare system. Now, this is really cool because every year they rotate all around the country for these Golden Games. And they're actually veterans from all over the world. I was looking at some of the things here that I was going to look at. One of them was badminton, and that's right. That's one of the events that I found out. They're going to have folks from Guam and you know, that's what they do. They don't play football. They play badminton, right? So I'm just looking at that. I don't think I'll have much of a chance. But the competition includes air rifle, badminton, of course, boccia, that must be bocce ball, bowling, cycling, and field events such as discus, shot, and javelin, golf, horseshoes, nine ball. Huh? How many of you guys can shoot some nine ball? Power walk, you know what that is, shuffleboard, swimming, table tennis, and track. And there will be exhibitions that will not be part of the competition, but there'll be exhibitions because they may be in future Golden Age events. And that will be basketball, disc golf, pickleball. I have no idea what pickleball is. Anybody know what that is? Derek, you know what that is? No, they're all shaking their heads here. Heidi? No, she doesn't know. Pickleball. Racquetball and rowing. So this is coming up in July, the National Veterans Golden Age Games. Registration is open right now, and it's all part of your VA healthcare system. Man, it's going to be a blast. It's going to be July 10th to 14th. Imagine getting all us veterans together. Nine ball. Or I'll break your thumbs, man. So how do you find out more? You go to veteransgoldenagegames.va.gov. Don't ask me to spell all that, but www.veteransgoldenagegames.va.gov. Now, let's have a strong contingency from Ann Arbor to go down there and get some of those medals. We should be able to clean up, right? Nine ball, heck yeah. Cycling, all the time. Anyway, the Veterans Golden Age Games. That'll be right there in Detroit, Michigan. Do we have a chance to go to Legal Help? Yeah, let's go to Legal Help. Then a bump, and we'll come back to Lori Carr. So make it quick. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Wham! Talk 1600. Okay, we're back, and that bump got us all back. And right now, on the line, and welcome to Veterans Radio, for Lori Carr, the coordinator here in the Southeast for Vets and pets. Pets for vets. Lori, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Bob. How are you?
Well, earlier in the did you hear the beginning of the program?
I tuned in a little part of the way through, so I may have missed some of that.
Well, it was very
a bit emotional.
Very emotional. And so was this. This was a, you know, we talk a lot about PTS, and don't forget, folks, it's PTS, drop the D. No D. It's not a disorder. It's not a disease. It's just plain old stress. But that we here at Veterans Radio aren't always looking for the medical, and we're looking for other things that can assist veterans in their transitioning or just their everyday life. And buddy to buddy was one example. And now Pets for Vets. I'm a biggie on Pets for Vets. Tell us about your 501c3 Pets for Vets. Lauren, where do you get the pets from?
Well, we work with shelters and rescues around Michigan, and we never go to breeders. We don't adopt puppies. We concentrate on the dogs that are having the hardest time getting adopted just because they might be older or they just got turned in and, you know, may have had, you know, a behavioral problem or two that just never was addressed by an irresponsible owner. So we try and work to home those dogs that really are great dogs and need a great home. So shelters and rescues are what we work with and all over Michigan.
Is it just dogs or do you – no, it says pets. So do you do –
yes,
do you do,
indeed.
Do you do goldfish and
– well, I can't promise you that we'll be training any goldfish.
Oh, okay, because there's a little training. Well, how about kitties?
Kitties, we can manage, yes.
So,
Pets for Vets encompasses all manner of animals. Mostly, our veterans are interested in dogs or cats, but my colleague on the west side of the state has placed a couple of rabbits.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fairly sure that was not for dinner. They are pets.
Yeah.
And there may be another, I think there's another chapter somewhere in the country that's placed maybe a reptile of some sort, snake perhaps. But, you know, usually our veterans are interested in something cuddly. So, yeah, but we're open to
well,
all
I mean,
kinds.
Pets. I mean, they're interested in cuddly things, and it's this case is pets, right? Right. Okay, don't
indeed.
Go there, Bob. Don't go there.
Bob.
Don't go there, Bob. This is Pets for Vets. That's right. Don't go there, Bob. Well, what kind of feedback can you share with us that you've heard from the vets that have received a pet? What kind of feedback?
Oh, my goodness. We are so thrilled and heartened by the veterans in our program. Many of them, one in particular that I'm thinking of, Tony Malia, he has a little dachshund dog named Opie. And Opie has transformed his life completely. When we first met Tony and his family, his wife and his adult son, they weren't getting out very much, and Tony wasn't the happiest person. He had some mobility issues, and he is a victim of Agent Orange and was in Vietnam. So he's had a number of challenges, and at first he was looking for a dog that could help with some of his balance issues, but really we were concentrating on some other aspects of his needs and those that would be best suited to his environment as well. And it turned out that this little dachshund was the best thing that's ever happened to him. He is about 10 times more active than he was when we first met him. He is incredibly active in the Legion. He was before, but he's twice that now, traveling all over the place, doing lots of things, and Opie is with him everywhere he goes. And it's made an incredible difference in his life and the lives of his family members, because they see the difference in him and know that he is happy and fulfilled, and he's just done wonders for that whole unit.
Oh,
and
that,
we're so proud of them.
That must make you just your heart swell. I mean, to hear stuff like that.
It really does. It really does. It makes a huge difference. And, you know, while pets may not be a cure-all, and not every veteran is ready for the responsibility of a pet, if you're ready for it and you can derive the benefit from it, it can really be transformative.
No, I think this is very important, folks, because sometimes, whether it's a relative or someone that we're very close to, and, gee, I don't know whether this person can really benefit from that or not, that's what the program like Pets for Vets does. They screen the military, soldier, sailor, what they screen, and then they go and make that match, and it's not something that's casually done, and there's training involved. Why don't you tell us about that, Laurie?
Exactly, and it's incredibly important. There are lots of programs out there for veterans to adopt a pet. So a number of shelters will offer discounts or actually give away dogs or cats to veterans with ID and so forth. What we do is we're more of a matchmaking service. We do an intensive interview and home evaluation to really understand what one particular veteran's needs are. And that involves psychological needs, physical needs, family environment, physical environment, so that when we go out and search the shelters and rescues, we find the dog or cat that really best fits their situation, so that it's a long and lasting and really beneficial relationship. Once we've actually identified the dog, for example, one of our trainers will take the dog in or place the dog with a foster for the training period. And that can be anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. But we train the dogs for basic good manners.
That's really cool. That's really cool that you do that, that you get a trained animal.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are so many great dogs out there in the shelters that just need a chance, and are perfectly trainable and happy-go-lucky pets that we can train them to do what they need to do. We can train for specialized skills like watching your six when you're out in your public, doing a house sweep when you get home from being gone all day. So we can do those kinds of specialized skills if needed. But one thing I want to make clear is that these are not service animals. These are companion animals, and they can go a long way to helping out any veteran who could really use some emotional support.
Or just would like to have a pet.
Just a buddy.
Just
sure.
A buddy. Right. It doesn't mm-hmm. even have to be PTS or any of that other. Just a buddy. And you were talking about the trainers. Now, these are volunteers. Is that correct?
That's true. There are a couple of trainers that we do pay. We pay for training services, but everything else is volunteer. Our costs are veterinary care for the animals that we adopt. It's for training and supplies. We provide every veteran with a welcome package when the dog is through training, so they get food and leashes, crates, toys. They get heartworm medication and flea and tick prevention, and we set each veteran up with a veterinarian in their community who can help provide low-cost care. So our program has absolutely no cost to the veterans that are in it. We take care of basically everything, and our whole operation is funded through donations. We'll be writing grants soon.
Well, we'll get that. We'll get money, folks. Everybody rolls on money, but we'll get to that in a second. How do they? Mm-hmm. How do they find out? What's the website?
So the website is www.petsforvets.com. You can find our chapter as well as the many, many other chapters we now have across the country. In Michigan, we have 3 chapters. We have the Southeast Michigan chapter, of which I'm the director. We have the West Side, which is over near Grand Rapids in Rockford. And then we have a 3rd chapter up near Traverse City. So we're trying to cover as much of Michigan and get to as many of Michigan's veterans as we can.
Well, you know, this looks to be very expensive. How much does this cost a veteran?
For anyone who owns a pet, it can cost...
I mean, what do they pay for your services?
Oh, they don't pay anything for our service.
Ah.
Our services are completely free to veterans.
So it's complimentary, and thank you to the veterans for serving, correct?
Absolutely.
Now we're getting, so we got what, Heidi, 1 minute? She's going, yeah, a minute and something, shaking her head left and right. No, that's our associate director. Anyway, I hear the theme in the background, too. That's coming up. So we got the band just woke up, and we're ready to go. Pets for Vets, want to thank you for being on the program today, and we will have you back. I mean, I love this. You know, how much is that doggy in the window? Well, you don't have to do that. And I love it because I'm thinking about training. And if you want a kitty, did you ever train a kitty?
We can train kitties.
Oh, you can. Oh, I got to see this. We got one. Lori, you are. Lori and I met about a year ago over at the 101st Airborne. Why don't you come back there?
I will.
No,
I love you guys.
Well,
great.
Contact them again and bring your organization back and make another presentation. We have to just keep this thing up and current. And if you would, for me, would you please send me some artwork so we can do a button ad on our program? Okay.
Oh, that would be lovely.
You got it.
I sure will.
Thank you, Lori, for being on the program. We're down to less than 20 seconds to go. This is Bob Gould. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening here on Wham! Talk Radio 1600 in Ann Arbor. And this is Bob Gould. Until next week, you are dismissed. We'll be right back.